Welcome to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch, episode 36. We're covering Avatar and Quagmire. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and with me is Sarah Blair. What's up, Sarah?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. I'm very excited to talk about, well, both of these episodes, but I'm very excited to talk about our second episode, and we can get into why a little later on. We've got to give Avatar its time in the sun, so let's get right into it, because we're going to have a lot to say today.
Yes.
On the X-Pod. I
can't wait to talk about Skinner and then my favorite episode ever.
That's true. It's like a two-pack for you. You get Skinner and your favorite episode. So
I don't know if you can hear it through the microphone, but I'm grinning so big. I can't wait to talk about these episodes.
Oh, man. So we'll start up talking about Avatar. It aired on April 26, 1996, with a story by David Duchovny and Howard Gordon, with a teleplay by Howard Gordon and directed by James Charleston. So getting into this one, can you explain to me what happens in this episode? Because I'm very confused.
Well, I love what they do with Skinner's character, and I love the tie-in to the Vietnam War where he died and had this out-of-body death experience, an NDE, mm-hmm. near-death experience. And so basically when he was dead, this woman came to him, appeared to him, and carried him to safety, I suppose, and saved him, I guess. And so she kind of keeps showing up in his dreams. But he, from what I could tell in this episode, he was being framed for something.
Right, because he's been kind of rebellious against...
Right.
The establishment, if you will, and, mm-hmm. and recent episodes, and this is them getting back at him, and had his, you know, guardian old hag syndrome not interfered, you know, he would have been in a lot of trouble. That is the folklore tie-in of this episode. You know, they call it the old hag syndrome. It's like you wake up in the middle of the night and you see some, you know, woman sitting on top of you, and people... We'll say it's sleep paralysis. They'll say, you know, it's actually is spiritual beings and things, and it's an interesting X-File idea. I don't know if the two mix very well, because it does kind of make it kind of confusing, because usually that would be the supernatural element that like takes over the whole episode. Like, oh, something's after Skinner, we got to get him. But actually, that's what's helping him. So it's a cool turn on that, because you assume ill intent from, you know, beings like that, right? Mm-hmm. But it was actually protecting him. And this is really our first Skinner-centric episode.
It is.
Scully herself points out to Mulder, we know almost nothing about him outside his work. And it's true. Like, that could be the audience saying that. And Mitch Pileggi is so cool. And they really started to capitalize on him as a character and him as an actor. Starting
right.
Mainly in, you know, season three, I think, is really started to take off, and he became that, you know, that triangle of Mulder, Scully, and Skinner, like the three touch points of the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, even before that, and, you know, Paperclip, and I think that's when we really got to see his guts.
It's where you pucker up and kiss my ass.
Yeah. So that's sort of where we got to see, like, hey, he's really on Mulder and Scully's side, and he's trying to help them. And I love that they established that he believes in the supernatural in this episode, because it really supports everything later on, and you kind of understand why he believes them when they say these ridiculous, crazy things, and Mulder comes to him with these insane theories that would be, you know, he'd get tossed out if it were anybody else. But because it's Skinner, because he's had his own experiences, he really believes it. And I think that really helps create that triangle, like you said.
It does inform his actions towards them before and after this, for sure. You kind of understand why he would, you know, be a little more open-minded than another generic FBI person might have been, and usually are. And pretty much everybody else in the FBI thinks these guys are crazy. Spooky Mulder.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the dynamic here, because usually it's Scully and Skinner on one side and Mulder on the other. But this mm-hmm. episode flips it around, where Mulder is the one in Skinner's corner and Scully is the one who's like, I don't know. And I like that. I like how they can mix up the dynamics. And it's not just always like the sensible people over here and crazy spooky Mulder over here. You know, like, and this, you know, forges a good relationship and continues to form a good relationship between Skinner and Mulder. And because they always have that, like, the disapproving dad, right? Skinner is one of Mulder's many disapproving dads. So to see him on the other side of things is very interesting.
Definitely, for sure. And I really liked how, I guess, faithful and adamant and insistent Mulder was. He's like, I know he did not do this, because you don't really see, from whatever interactions they have to begin with, you don't really get that dynamic. But then when Mulder steps in and you see how concerned he is for Skinner and how hard he fights for him, you're like, oh, well, Mulder gets that he's on their side and he really understands that. And they really are this team. So that was really fun to see. I really like that. And also, you know, the scene in bed was nice too. I'm not gonna lie. Really enjoyed that.
Something for everyone in this episode of The X-Files. One last thing I'll say, as Skinner's wife, played by Jennifer Hetrick, she played Captain Picard's girlfriend, Vash, in a few episodes of Star Trek. And I was like, oh my God, that's Vash! I never seen this episode until I did the 201 Days of The X-Files a couple years ago, leading up to the revival series. And I was like, that's Vash! She's Skinner's wife! And I was like, oh, maybe she's in more episodes, but she's not. So
no, she never comes back.
But his marriage is saved, right? Seems that way.
Yeah, apparently. I mean,
that's the implication we get. So
yeah, I'm glad to know that she lived, because it wasn't entirely clear in that last scene with her.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that aren't entirely clear about this whole situation. But hey, you know, that's why we have podcasts about it, right? So we can discuss it as fans.
Yeah. I wonder if that was more of an editing for time thing, or if it was what that was about.
That's true. They often trim scenes like that because they only got, you know, 45 minutes, 48 minutes, whatever it is nowadays. Feels like 30 minutes nowadays. So many
it
commercials.
Does.
So.
It does. Yeah. Got to get those commercials in there.
Well, that's what I want to see in season 11. I want to see Skinner and his wife, right? We want more Skinner in season 11. Let's bring his wife back. Let's get some more stuff going on there, right? We see Mulder's and Scully's entire family. They'll give us just one more glimpse at Skinner's life. Come on, guys. So
I just want more Skinner. I just want him to have his whole show. Just him. Just
yeah,
Skinner
not his wife, right?
Yeah. No, she needs to be gone.
All right, Sarah, well, it's time to talk about your favorite episode of The X-Files, and one of my favorites as well, Quagmire. It aired on May 3rd, 1996. It was written by Kim Newton and directed by Kim Manners. And also, I just want to say this, Darren Morgan had a hand in some of the writing of this episode. He helped out a little bit, kind of a ghostwriter in the background, because there's lots of elements from, you know, his previous episodes in this episode as well. And has a bit of that, you know, tongue-in-cheek flavor that we come to love so much about Darren Morgan. So this is I consider like an unofficial Darren Morgan entry in the Darren Morgan canon of the show. So
oh yeah, that's why it's so good.
So it's your favorite episode. Tell us why.
Well, gosh.
Where do you begin?
I mean, I could go on for an hour about this probably, and I have like 10 minutes. So, okay. I love that it's got almost everything I love about The X-Files. The only thing missing is Skinner. We need Skinner in this episode.
We just had Skinner. We just had plenty of Skinner. Okay, give him a break.
So, yeah, it's got Mulder and Scully, a little bit of shippiness on the rock. It's got the funny stuff, it's got the scary stuff, it's got the investigating, it's got the small town claustrophobic feel that really I love about, you know, those episodes that you get the small town and it's like everybody's in on this little secret and everybody knows what's going on, and then Mulder and Scully come in and they're trying to figure it all out and work around these dynamics with all these local people who've been living this their whole life. You know, everybody knows the legend of Big Blue and they all believe it because, you know, Hansel's cow got eaten and, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it just has every element of The X-Files that I really love.
Well, as I talked about in my Jersey Devil episode, when I did the X-Cast with Tony on the Jersey Devil, I'm a big cryptozoology guy. I love this stuff, right? Lake monsters and Bigfoot and all that. And as much as the X-Files dropped the ball with its, you know, quote-unquote Bigfoot episode with the Jersey Devil, it redeems itself here with its quote-unquote Loch Ness Monster episode, right? Because it's so on point. They did a perfect job capturing, like, the culture that surrounds like monsters, like you were talking about. You know, they have the gift shops, the hoaxes, the vague photographs, right? They just capture that so well without like without making fun of it, you know, but just kind of laughing with it instead of just flat out laughing at it, because you know that's
is that a tooth?
That's, you know, that's what really got me into probably this, even liking the X-Files, like this kind of idea of shows, was watching Unsolved Mysteries when I was a kid, you know, and they had episodes about this. They had one about like Lake Champlain, and there's a famous photograph of that lake monster. And I gotta say, like, I love all this stuff, but lake monsters are kind of hard to believe in, just the fact that, you know, these things got to come up to breathe every now and then. Right, so there's not going to be some plesiosaur style monster that's living in a lake, but that's what I loved about this episode, right? Because they give you a realistic explanation, right? The giant alligator, but then at the end you get that twist from Mulder. He's looking, and right when he walks off, you get the classic, you know, sea surfer come up out of the lake and swim off. And I just thought that was such a brilliant ending, such a great way to put it.
Absolutely, yeah, and it captures the whole essence of the X-Files.
Yes.
Because Mulder is so gung-ho about finding this lake monster. He jumps right in there with the rest of the townsfolk, and he's trying so hard to believe in this lake monster. And then they think it's just an alligator, but the truth really is out there.
The truth is down there, right?
It is.
But, you know, I'm also a huge dog lover, and I felt so sorry for Queequeg when he got eaten, huh?
You're not going to get an agreement with me on that one.
Oh.
I did not like Queequeg.
Why not?
He was so... I love dogs. I do love dogs. I'm a dog lover. I don't like the yippity-yappity buggy-eyed ones. I'm not a big fan of the bug-eyed Pomeranians. My aunt has a dog that's got... it just is constantly moving and just barking and on you all the time. And I like the lap dogs that are quiet. I like dogs that are more like cats, but
I mean, I know what you're saying, right? I mean, I do like some kinds of dogs more than others. But they're kind of like poofy and kind of, you know, pretty dogs, you know, and kind of annoying. Yeah. And I like the more just kind of, you know, you can go wrestle the dog, you're playing tug of war with him kind of dog.
Right,
you know? But anyway, all that means, that dog is a dog, and it was sad to see him die.
It was.
But you knew as soon as they brought him, you're like, this is not going to end well.
Mm-hmm. Poor Queequeg.
Poor Queequeg.
He is a snack.
But you're right, you know, as you mentioned the conversation on the rock with Mulder and Scully, and even though I'm not a Mulder and Scully shipper, and like romantically, I am a shipper of their like platonic relationship, and even that, you know, that was a great, if you want them together, if you don't, it's a great moment between the two of them, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I actually read on the Wikipedia, the X-Files Wikipedia, that set flooded, and it took them forever to get that rock right. Because they literally couldn't nail down the rock. And they filmed it in a tank. So it was not even, like, you know. So that was interesting, a little tidbit.
There you go. Just ruin the illusion for everybody, Sarah. Thanks a lot. Truth is out there. But anyway, yeah, I love it when let me say this, and then we'll wrap it up. And again, looking back, I think we've all felt this way. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, if you don't feel this way, but I feel like revisiting the show through the X-Cast and now through the Podwatch, like, it's these standalone episodes that really stick out as like the best of the best, right? Because when you were watching the show initially, you always want the alien stuff, you want the mythology stuff, right? But then watching back on it, you realize that stuff doesn't quite add up as much as you were hoping. Like, it was built up so much and just kind of fizzled out. But these standalone episodes, they're the most fulfilling to revisit, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I definitely enjoy the standalones because they're kind of where you get to see Mulder and Scully shine. When they're running around after the aliens and all of that, it's so intense, and you don't really get to see much of their character
Plot, less character in those, more character in these for sure. So, all righty. Well, you know, we'll, at some point, I don't know how the schedule's going to work out, but we will be back talking about Quagmire in much more detail on the X-Cast itself, Sarah. So I look forward to that. Diving in, no pun intended, deeper.
I can't wait. It's going to be great.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. Sarah, if people want to find you and talk to you more about Quagmire or Skinner, where can they find you out there on the internet?
I'm on Twitter, Sarah L. Blair, SARAHLBLAIR. And I'm also at www.sarahlblair.com. It's my website. And yeah, I'm happy to talk about Skinner, Quagmire, anything X-Files or book related. I have a book out too called Darkness Shifting. And it's like X-Files meets King Arthur. So that was a lot of fun to write.
Sold. Yeah. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at Big Blue. No, I should. Like, if I was like a like a real inside baseball X-Files guy, my Twitter handle would be like Big Blue or something like that, right?
Mine was. Oh, my AIM in high school was Big Blue 82.
Oh, that is legit, fans. You know she's a true fan, AOL. Guys. True mm-hmm. fan right there. So good, Sarah. So good. But sadly, my Twitter handle is not Big Blue. It is Moron Zach at MoreonZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Sold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of That Young Superman Show. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville. And one more podcast I'm a host of is Standard Orbit on the Trek FM network. We talk about the old and new adventures of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there at Trek FM. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. And as for the XCast itself, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast and our Facebook patron group, the XCast X-Files Podcast Fan Group. So just search the XCast on Facebook and you will be able to find us on there. Well, tomorrow the Podwatch continues with two episodes, Wet Wired and Talitha Kumi. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but Tony will be back to set me straight if I was wrong. But until then, guys, trust no one.